Yes, if I did not express my appreciation for several things, first and foremost is your presence this morning. I realize what an effort it is. Never before in my lifetime, and probably in anybody else's, have we had to exert as much effort just to assemble as we are now, and I appreciate that, as well as the effort been put forth thus far in our services by Brother Matt and his leadership. And I appreciate very, very much what Brother Charles had to say as we remember the death, burial, and resurrection of the Lord Jesus. And it goes without saying that, as I put it this way, we're crossing water we've never had to cross before. Am I right, Matt? I mean, this is all new to us. But Brother Charles alerted us to the fact that there is a disease that's always been out there from the early morning of time until this good hour, that's a whole lot worse than COVID. Now, what do you plan to do about it? Oh, we can get vaccinated for these diseases, but what about that disease of sin? I'm aware of the fact that from the very early morning of time, God began to unfold his plan. And we have always struggled with carrying out that plan. And if you'll allow me just a moment, I was raised in this. I've been in church work all my life. And I'm aware of the fact that sometimes we look at this physical structure as the ultimate in terms of our carrying out God's plan. And I don't know if you've ever been through a building project as I have. Does the word nightmare come to, you know? Maybe you built a house. Maybe you built a house and you know what a walkthrough is. And I can remember doing that with our church building. Maybe you've been through that in your home. Walking through, and what do you find? Well, that's not right, and that's not right, and that's not right, and that's not right, and that's not. My point this morning, please, with the help of your prayers, is that that's not hard to do. And I'm aware of the fact, I said earlier, having grown up in preaching, sometimes that seems like all we preachers seem to be able to do is get up and talk about what's wrong with this and what's wrong with this and what's wrong with this. And I'm aware of the fact we can do that with church buildings, we can do that with individuals, but let me ask you this morning, in your heart, as you look into your heart, what's right about the church? And again, I don't mean the building, but what is your feeling toward the church of the future? I've been going to church lectureships literally all my life. My daddy used to drag me when I was barely able to walk to church, to lectureships at Christian colleges. And I listen to preachers talk about the church of the future. And then I started preaching, and I started hearing some of the negativism, some of the pessimism of what I was hearing from people at lectureships about the church of the future. And the criticism of other brethren. And then I went to law school and found out that some of that criticism could land you in a civil court if you were in the business world. And it was just this attitude, as my granddaddy used to say, baptized in vinegar and weaned on a dill pickle, about the future of the church. And so what I want to do with you this morning is consider the future of the church, and let me ask you a question. Do you look at yourself as a victim of defeat or a victor over a sin-sick world? What's right about the church? Well, let me give you four things real, real, real quick. Number one, the purpose is right. The purpose. It disturbs me very, very much that there are some in the religious community that actually teach that the church was just kind of a second thought. I've said before that some folks want to look at the church as if it was a quarterback walking up to line of scrimmage and changing the play at the last minute. No, that's just not the case at all. But rather, the Bible teaches us that before the foundation of the world, Ephesians chapter 3, in fact, Paul's going to spend about 9 or 10 verses from verse 9 all the way to verse 21, that the church was in the mind of God before the foundation of the world. And this answers a very dangerous doctrine in the religious community in which we're living now, called premillennialism, that does actually teach that Jesus came to establish the kingdom. The Jews rejected it, and he established the church as just a standby, and that he's going to come back some sweet day and set up his kingdom on this earth, and we're all going to go to Jerusalem and reign for 1,000 years. And the Greek word for that is baloney, because that's not what the scriptures teach. It was in the mind of God from the foundation of the world, before man ever really walked on this earth. It was in God's plan. It was in God's plan for mankind to know the body of Christ. And I say again, I'm so glad that Charles enumerated that as we partook of the Lord's Supper. That body that was broken, that blood that was shed, was used to establish his church. Now, you and I need to understand that from day to day, the eternal purpose of the church basically is threefold. One of which is that in some cases, we're called upon to meet the physical needs of people. I remind you in Matthew chapter 25, the clearest picture on the judgment day for those of us that are Christians will be in light of meeting physical needs, because Jesus uses that illustration. I didn't have any food. I was hungry, and you fed me. I didn't have any clothes, and you gave me clothes to wear. I didn't have any water, and you gave me to drink. And Walter, you've seen that firsthand far better than any of us, and Bobby and any others that have been to Honduras. You've seen that firsthand, haven't you, my brother? And the joy, you mentioned it earlier, the joy on those people's faces, those children, and having the physical needs met. Well, it didn't just stop with what Jesus said. Shortly after the establishment of the church, what's the very first problem they have to deal with? They have some precious ladies, some widows, who were being neglected in the daily administration of food. Because you see, Jews came from all over the known world at that time. The church was established. They didn't exactly immediately go back home. How are we going to feed them? How we're going to care for their physical needs? And some of these precious ladies were being neglected. And so from an organizational standpoint, the church had to respond to that in meeting physical needs. Well, not only that, but our purpose involves meeting emotional needs. I love the way Paul put it to the folks at Rome in Romans 14 and verse 19. When he said, so let us follow after things that make for peace. That's hard work, folks. Peace doesn't mean the absence of conflict, but it means managing that conflict in a peaceful way. And so listen to what Paul says. Let us follow after things that make for peace and things whereby we may edify one another. Do people look at you at somebody that builds them up? Or at somebody that tears down everything you touch? That's part of spiritual needs. And it involves little bitty kids in our classes. It involves it involves the adult programs in terms of teaching and preaching. The purpose is right, in that we're meeting physical needs, we're meeting emotional needs, but primarily, are you listening? We meet the spirit, the physical needs and the emotional needs so that we might meet the spiritual needs. Now, tragically, sometimes we never get to that third one. We're all about meeting physical needs. We're all about meeting emotional needs. But we never get to that third one, the meeting of the spiritual needs. In Acts 20, Paul stops at the port city of Miletus, and he calls the elders of the church at Ephesus over. And Paul had spent several years at that church. He loved those elders. He loved those brethren. And he calls them over to the port city of Miletus, and he tells them they're not going to see him anymore. Because he knows that when he gets to Jerusalem, he's going to be given over to the authorities. And it is a heartbreaking, tearful scene as Paul tells them that. But then he drops a bomb on them. He says, not only are you not going to see me anymore, but there's an apostasy coming, a departure from the truth. Among your own selves, men will arise, speaking perverse things, and draw men unto themselves. What's happening? They lost sight of the purpose. They weren't meeting the spiritual needs. And so it's fruitless for us to call ourselves his church when, okay, yeah, well, we feed some folks. We're meeting some physical needs. And we try to hold one another up when we're hurting and build up those emotional needs. But when we never get to the spiritual needs, see, that's what church is all about, is meeting spiritual needs. And so what's right about the church? The purpose is right in meeting the spiritual needs of men and women and boys and girls. But not only that, not only is the purpose right, the plan is right. I've said before, I had the privilege of working under some marvelous elders. Henry Dawson is one I've shared with you about, who had people skills that were unbelievable. He worked in labor relations with the phone company. Another great elder was a brother named Ed Dykes, who was an engineer with Rust Engineering. And he taught me something I filed right back here. I've never forgotten. Plan your work and work your plan. Y'all ever heard that at work, Matt? Just a time or 2,000. Plan your work. Work your plan. Well, guess what? That's exactly what God did. He started with a purpose, and then he begins to carry it out in his plan of, and we like to call it the plan of salvation. And that's the crimson thread that runs from the Garden of Eden until the book of Revelation closes, is the salvation of man. Here's the way Paul put it in Titus 2 in verse 11. For the grace of God that brings salvation. He didn't say just the grace of God that's going to put food on your plate. He didn't say it's just the grace of God that's going to help you through tough times. See, that's the physical and the emotional. But bottom line, he said, the grace of God that brings salvation hath appeared unto all men. It's a gift. It's grace. We respond to it by obedient faith. Paul called it a gift in Ephesians 2 in verse 8. In Romans 1 in verse 5 and also Romans 16 in verse 26, he calls it the obedience of faith. Well, here are these people that have experienced the grace of God in terms of being told about the salvation that's in Jesus Christ. They responded to it. They obeyed it. That's the obedience of faith. Now, what did he do with them? He didn't tell them go out there and start your or join the church. No, he added them to his church. Which one? Well, the Bible says there's not but one. In Ephesians chapter 4. One Lord, one faith, one baptism. Jesus said, upon this rock I will build my church. Matthew 16, 18. He didn't say I'm going to build a bunch of churches all teaching different things. Upon this rock I will build my church. And that's his plan. The purpose became the plan. Now, what does that say to me and you this morning in the 21st century? Somebody says, well, preacher, I'm already a Christian. then the call this morning to you and to me is to count the cost of taking the next step. Because if the Lord tarries, we got work to do tomorrow. If the Lord tarries, we got work to do next week, next month, next year. And he expects us to count the cost. Tragically, we're like that little girl I've told you about that mom and dad put her in bed and they went back downstairs and was watching television and they heard a big thump. And they went running back upstairs and she's laying in the floor giggling. And they said, "Sugar, what's wrong?" And she said, "Well, I guess I went to sleep too close to where I got in." Well, tragically, that's kind of describes some of us, doesn't it, Matt? We just kind of went to sleep too close to where we got in, and that's not God's plan. God's plan is to grow. Isn't that what he said? And to grow in grace and knowledge? And I want to say again how much I appreciate your kindness and concern about my granddaughter Maggie. And you've seen what I've seen on Facebook. She is growing. She is gaining weight in typical Bradley fashion. But that's what she's supposed to do. That's normal. And the normal church, are you listening? The normal church is a growing church. When the church is not growing, we don't need to look and say, "Oh, what should we do to make the church grow?" No, the church is an organism, a she. She'll grow if we'll let her. The issue is, what am I doing? What are you doing? What are we doing? It's getting in the way. See, that's God's plan that demands you and I count the cost, and it not dollars and cents. So much of it is having it my way. No. It's having it his way. And that's why counting the cost is so tough for us, because it demands sacrifice. It demands faithfulness. And so sadly, we have confused faithfulness with perfection. And they're not the same. I absolutely love 1 John 1 and verse 7. Where John says, "For if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of his Son cleanses us." And that ongoing process of the blood with the fruit of the vine still on your lips, that ongoing process of having that sin forgiven based on walking in the light, walking in his grace. Speaking of which, the opposite of that is in Galatians chapter 5, where Paul's going to speak about falling from grace, and he uses that very term. Some of our religious neighbors say that's not in the Bible. Well, they're not reading Galatians, because Paul said in Galatians 5, "You were running well. What hindered you?" Now, these were folks that were already Christians. But as my grandmother would say, the old devil got a hold of him. And he says, what has hindered you? What you have fallen from grace. And that was never God's plan from the beginning. He wanted us to stay faithful as we constantly lean on him, as we're constantly penitent of our own weaknesses and sins, as we continue to walk in the light. So the purpose is right, and the plan is right, and guess what? Let's get right down to where we all live. The people are right. The people are right. Do you remember, maybe with your own children or somebody, did you, here's the church, and here's the steeple. You remember that? And you open it up, and here's all the people. Well, guess what? That's the way God planned it. That was God's purpose. Because the church has never been a building, never designed that way. It's always been about the people, the saved. People that are right with God. Not because we're so good, but because he's so good. Because of that covenant that we have because of the power of God. And I love the way Paul puts that in Romans 1 and verse 16. He says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God unto salvation. There's where the real power is. We sing about power in the blood, don't we, Matt? But that's what grace is all about. And I believe with all of my heart this morning, there are a whole bunch of saved people out there that ought to cause us to rejoice. That's the reason we rejoice when Walter comes home. Not just because we missed you, brother, but because of the message you bring back. The pictures and the smiles on those faces, those ought to cause us to rejoice. Those are the people that are right about the church. We have some preachers out there that are right. I'm not a pessimist by nature. And I'm so fortunate as I grew up in this state in the heritage that I have of having grown up around great preachers. Some of you grew up around great preachers, and we love talking about those blessed ones who've gone on before us, who fought the battle in the heat of the day and challenged us to stay faithful to the word. And so I'm optimistic about that in terms of that's what's right. These are people who cared about the plan, who understood the purpose. Now here's the issue. And I used to not think about this as much as I do now. I guess it because of those grandchildren. I just happen to have a picture. I look at the pictures of my grandchildren and I think, where are they going to go to church? Where are they going to worship? Who's going to teach my granddaughters in Sunday school and my grandsons? Are they going to have a faithful congregation of God's people? See, that's where we are, folks. We can look back and say, okay, the purpose was right and the plan is right, but it still boils down to the people. And I've long held the view that the greatest challenge in the Lord's church is leadership. Groups of men who understand, as the Old Testament says, they understood the times. They understand where we are. And they understand where we need to be. And then, by grace through faith, looking at His purpose and His plan, let's figure out a way to get there. Let's figure out a way to get from plan A to plan B. No. Let's figure out a way to use plan A to get from place A to place B. See, we want to change the plan, and that was never the intention. And tragically, we've tried to do that. I had a conversation just yesterday with a young man that had grown up in the church, and now what he believes and where he is so foreign to the New Testament, it's scary. And I actually told him to his face, your granddaddy would turn over in his grave. Well, my granddaddy, I said, no. It's not your granddaddy for who he was. It's your granddaddy for what he pointed you to. Your granddaddy would be disappointed you've left this and started off with, well, this is how it makes me feel. This is what I think. See, that's not part of the plan. That does not enter into the plan. The plan is still perfection based on His word. And that's why leadership and preachers and teachers, and most importantly, mamas and daddies, parents who have communicated to their children that the church of the Lord has first priority. I was raised by parents like this. I've told this before, but I never dreamed it would come to fruition like it was, like it has. We had, as when I was a high school senior, somebody decided to schedule a gospel meeting during football season. Are you listening to me, Matt? They scheduled a gospel meeting during football season, and I was the starting quarterback for the high school team on Friday night. But we had a meeting. What do I do? Do I miss the ball game? Do I miss the meeting? Which one do I miss? Now, my point is this. We are in the middle of an age in the church when those of us that were faced with that 40 years ago are the grandparents now. And I've said repeatedly, we don't always know what kind of job we did as parents in terms of how our kids turn out, but what about the grandchildren? Are they right? We're losing. And they alerted us to this, the number of people, 40, 50 years ago, that we were losing 50 to 60% of our teenagers. And we say, oh, that's terrible. It is. It is terrible. But what about the 50% that stay? What about the 50% that are faithful? What about the 50% that want to go to heaven? What about the 50% that want to marry a Christian and raise their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? Let's communicate to our kids. Let's communicate to our grandchildren two basic themes. Number one, that they have potential. They have potential, not just to do great things academically, not just to do great things financially, but they have potential to do great things spiritually. And in communicating that to them, communicate secondly to them, help me get you back to God in one place. See, that's where morality comes in. That's where mamas and daddies come in, teaching what I've been dealing with in juvenile court for 23 years. The drinking, the drugs, the illicit sex, the sin that's literally killing us. And I've seen it now, and I tell you these horror stories day in and day out. I'm tired of burying these teenagers. I'm tired of going to work and looking at a court docket. Okay, so-and-so's supposed to be in court Thursday. Well, they're dead. They overdosed on drugs. Welcome to my world. How do we prove? Well, we can do all the drug prevention, and I've heard it ad nauseum. How about trying this one on? Help me get you back to God in one place, because you've got potential. And that's the final P in that pod. We have potential. The purpose is right. The plan is right. The people are right. And all of it points to the potential. To look down the road of where we can be, saving souls, adding to the body. That's what growth is all about. But then there's an ultimate. There's an ultimate that you must see. And that's heaven itself. I love that song that we sing sometimes, Matt. We use the phrase, a foretaste of glory divine. That's a good one, ain't it? A foretaste of glory divine. What we enjoy now doesn't hold a candle to what God has in store for us. And that all of our labor, so to speak, not that we're working our way to heaven, but we're working God's plan that's based on His purpose that we together as people carry out. And then you start seeing that potential. Here's the way the Lord put it. Revelation 2 and verse 10. Be thou faithful unto death. We don't like to think about that part, do we? But to the child of God, Jesus took the sting out of it. To the child of God, there is no victory in that death for Satan. The victory is for us. Be thou faithful unto death, and I'll give thee a crown of life. So what about it, church? What about it? The purpose is right. The plan's right. The people are right. The potential is right. But there's one thing that's not right. And that is, it's not right unless you're a part of it. It's not right unless you are in that plan. You're in God's purpose. God looked down the stream of time and he saw you and he saw me, and while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And that's why I want you to be a child of God today. I want you to be baptized today. Not because it's me, it's because that's the way Jesus designed it in terms of why he came before the foundation of the world. It was in that purpose. And he carried out that plan. And so if you're not a Christian, if you're not a Christian, you can walk down this aisle and give me your hand and God your heart. We'll baptize you in water. You walk out of this building a new person. Maybe you've done that. You're hurting and you're struggling. You need the prayers of this church. We invite you to come. While we stand, while we sing, Matt will lead us.